There's a rally at the state capitol this evening to remind us that well before the federal government got serious about universal health care, Hawaii enjoyed the nation's highest rate of health insurance coverage. The Hawaii Prepaid Health Care Act was adopted in 1974, making our state the first in the U.S. to require minimum standards of health care benefits. Dean Neubauer is a professor emeritus at the UH Manoa Department of Political Science, who was a health care policy advisor to state government at the time. We spoke earlier this morning about the circumstances that led to health care reform here, and I asked him two questions. Could the Prepaid Health Care Act have happened today? And at the time of its enactment, could it have happened anywhere else?
As I've been just this second listening to you say that, it occurs to me that the way the Prepaid Health Care Act was produced was kind of a purposeful accident. Mm-hmm. And I would emphasize both sides of that. Purposeful in the sense that a lot of people worked very hard to make it happen, but accident in the sense that the kinds of circumstances that came together in Hawaii to produce it were not present anywhere else in the United States.
What was the year?
Well, the year is 67, if I have it correctly. It's mm-hmm. It's in that period. What struck me when I started working in the some years ago was the extraordinary role that the Nixon administration played in that. Mm-hmm. If we put ourselves, you and I are old enough that we can do this.
That's right.
If we put ourselves back and say, I remember Medicaid when Medicaid was created. In 1965. And then the Nixon administration comes in, and one of the things that that administration sees it could do is to develop employer mandates in the states. And that comes out to Hawaii, as it does to the rest of the states. Hawaii hires a law professor from Berkeley, by the name of Reisenfeld, and he writes a report which becomes the basis of what will become Prepaid. And then it goes through a set of politics here, as you would imagine, and we pass it. No other state does.
Mm-hmm.
And then later on, a national piece of legislation called the ERISA Act is passed, and that prohibits states from doing this kind of thing. And at that point, it is challenged in the courts and goes to the United States Supreme Court. And the court finds against it. And then the Hawaii delegation works very hard, especially through the senior senator, to create an exception to it. And that becomes the ERISA exception, which allows Prepaid to stay in place.
Meaning that it could not have been enacted in any other state after that court decision?
That's correct. We in fact got an exception. And people who did this for a living have told me that on the one hand, that was great because we were able to save the majority aspects of Prepaid, which found their way into subsequent programs such as SHIP. But you could not then change the law, the Prepaid law at the state level, without further federal action, and that never happened.
So that froze it in place.
That froze it in place.
What was the climate in Hawaii at the time that made it possible?
Well, Hawaii, as we all know, is unique amongst the American states. One of the things that made it unique is that we had attained statehood late, but we also had a fundamental plantation economy, which dominated our societies on all islands.
Mm-hmm.
And everybody who studied healthcare in Hawaii from that period on, from the 50s on, believed that it was the fact of the what I'm going to call the paternalistic nature of the plantation economy, which made it possible to see an employer mandate, is consistent with the culture of Hawaii. The other thing that made it possible, people think, is the fact that in that time, the mid-60s, that in the late 60s, the ILWU was still very powerful in Hawaii and had led to a whole set of legislation that had provided health care for all union workers. So when Prepaid came on the scene, it was for non-union workers.
Mm-hmm.
And the idea was severalfold. One is that it would make healthcare accessible, but two, that it would help to control cost, and three, that it would allow us to have a smaller gap group. And the gap group is the percentage of people in the population who don't have healthcare.
And all those goals got accomplished.
They got accomplished. And then into the 90s, we began to have a more significant gap group. And I was associated with a group of people, including the HMSA Foundation and others, who were at that point trying to find out why that was happening. Mm-hmm. Because the gap group in Hawaii, various ways of counting it, may have gone as high as 10%. But after prepaid, and in those kind of robust years of early prepaid, we had the smallest gap group in the country.
And that was when Hawaii started being touted as kind of a model for the nation in terms of more people covered here than in any other
state. Yeah, very much so. And then, you know, the administration succeeded each other. And at one point, Jack Lewin became the director of the State Department of Health. And he was very eager to promote that model. And
this is the Waihei administration.
This is the Waihei administration. And this is now just another story that we needn't go into. But at one point, Jack thought that he could sell that to the incoming Clinton administration. And that came to be contested against what became the Hillary Clinton plan. But it was widely recognized in the United States as quite unique.
Does it hold to this day?
Well, it does and it doesn't because of the changes in the healthcare market. Three other things that were present in the early Hawaii experience. One was the importance of on Oahu of the Crown hospital facilities, especially Queens and Kapi'olani, which had mandates from their Crown investments. And by investments, I mean what was given to them to establish them. The second thing that was important was the fact of the state hospital system, which had established a hospital on all of the islands, and all of us have watched that throughout the years go through one form or another into privatization. But it was this basic duopoly between HMSA and Kaiser, which at the time that prepaid was established may have had 70% of the market. Extraordinary.
What you're describing, Dean, in a couple of ways, a society that was, in some sense, as a plantation society, monolithic. People were used to going to just a few sources for their income and for their health care, in the case of the two, Kaiser and HMSA. So everything was kind of manageable, given the size of the population, given the fact that a lot of things moved in the same direction.
Yeah, and close-knit ethnic communities, both on the plantation and moving off the plantation. Mm-hmm. I think we're all aware of what happened, for example, when Japanese Americans moved off the plantation and came to be way overrepresented in public education and public service, et cetera, et cetera. So part of what that was about, I think, my interpretation, is you also had what I would call cultural affinity based upon these kinds of things. And then when Philippine-American workers come in to replace largely Japanese-American workers after the strike in the 20s, that simply gets replicated. And so there is this close-knit looking after nature of healthcare. So
it kind of gets to the very things in our local culture that we tend to celebrate.
Precisely.
Dean Neubauer is a professor emeritus at the University of Hawaii at Manoa Department of Political Science. He is also co-director of the Asia-Pacific Higher Education Research Partnership at the East-West Center and sits on Hawaii Public Radio's board of directors. There's a rally on the Capitol Rotunda today at 6 p.m. to celebrate the passage of the 1974 Hawaii Prepaid Health Care Act.